Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Pam Green, president of the Power Project Institute in Washington, D.C. She's going to be talking today about how to achieve success through people. Pam, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, let's start right off with the basic, obvious question. What is the Power Project Institute?
Well, I guess to sum it up, it would be a company that I launched back in the fall of last year after leaving a great job with the Society for Human Resource Management. And what I wanted to do was help companies achieve success through people. I didn't want to just do HR consulting. I didn't want to just label it as, motivational consulting and leadership development, but it encompasses a number of different things. And the reason why my tagline is helping companies achieve success through people is because people drive success in organizations, and they need it critically now more than ever, especially as we rebound from this economy. So we are involved in doing some consulting. I am working for a number of clients, and then I also am an executive coach. I do a lot of public speaking, a lot of keynote speeches around the country, and then I do some writing and training and development. So it's a little bit of everything that I love doing, and it gives me an opportunity to sort of spread my wings and continue to do more of the things that I love.
No, that's great. Now, you mentioned that you were originally at SHRM. So tell me a little bit about what you did there. Let's get a little bit about your background, if we could, before we launch into talking about the company. And tell me what maybe why you left, and then we can talk about what's going on.
Okay, sounds good. I went to work for SHRM in 2008 as a regional director, worked out of my home in Ohio. And about 18 months later, I was promoted to chief membership officer and stayed in that role until I left at the end of last year. Prior to that, I had worked in human resources as HR director for a number of different companies for about 17 years. And then overall, I have about 25-plus years of leadership experience in a variety of roles, including fundraising, health, safety, and security, and human resources, executive management, and you name it, public relations, just a number of different things at the leadership level, and really, really enjoyed that, I think, very challenging opportunities. And so at SHRM, what I had the opportunity to do was to stretch even more, and my responsibility as I was promoted was to lead the strategy for the growth and engagement of 260,000 plus members worldwide. It was a big job. It was a great opportunity. Some wonderful people I've met along the way, and I still keep in touch with. But it was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity and a great brand.
No, SHRM's a great organization. We've had a number of guests on here. Susan Post, of course, out here in the eastern part of the U.S., who, of course, you know. We're planning to obviously have other guests on as well. But I think one of the things that interests me is the fact that you came from a very solid HR SHRM background. And what did that do for you? I mean, a lot of our listeners are HR professionals here, business leaders, and we talk a lot about the value of an HR organization such as SHRM or a local chapter. Tell me a little bit of how that value really helps you in your career and why you would encourage others to think about things like that.
It's really interesting because my experiences now when I speak with individuals, and I talk about this a lot when I'm on the stage speaking or delivering a keynote, is the language and the experiences of human resources are so vast, they're so broad, not anyone can do HR. And it is a critical part of the business. What I hear and what I see is this transition and this shift from just focusing on HR to focusing on the business overall. So sometimes I'll get in an audience and I have some conversation with individuals afterward, and I can immediately discern and know who's in HR and who is a business leader in another part of the organization simply by the language. And what I share with HR professionals specifically is it's important to stretch. It's important to be an HR professional, but it's really important to stretch and understand the business so that you have a broader perspective and you understand how the overall implications of what you're doing are impacting the growth and development sustainability of that organization. So working for SHRM gave me even broader, a broader view of business, right? And when I worked in other organizations, I kind of understood how money, how the company made money, where how the company lost money, and you know, going through different recessionary periods and those kinds of things. But really understanding the business so that I could truly be a business partner is where I began to grow and stretch and develop. And working for SHRM really gave me the opportunity to partner cross-functionally across throughout the organization, and not just in my organization, but also I had to partner with our chapters and our states and partners that are in other entities that we rely on and we depend on for the growth and the sustainability of the operation. So it just really broadened my perspective, and I think made me a better business leader, so that I felt when I was ready to move on that, you know, I had scooped up as much experiences and opportunities that I was afforded, and it's really impacting how I do business even today.
No, I think, you know, interestingly, I've read through your site, powerprojectinstitute.com, and one of the things you talk a lot about is building a world-class HR operation. And you talk a lot about that business mindset that you need to have. Do you want to expand a little bit on that? I know that's one of the topics you use in your speaking engagements, but it would be helpful for the audience to understand a little bit about what you mean by that.
Yeah, when I talk about building a world-class HR operation, what I'm talking about is thinking about HR as a business within the business. And there are so many things that go into it, and we get the people piece. So I don't really talk about the business side of engaging the people, because as HR professionals, we get it. What I talk about is understanding, you know, putting together models, business models that work for your company, and building a reputation inside the company as well as the industry, and doing competitive analysis so that you can see who you're competing with for talent. Sometimes it's talent for talent. Sometimes it's, you know, you're competing in different ways, and you have different ways in which we compete with other organizations. We talk about building communication strategies, and what I really focus on is that financial piece and recognizing that HR can be viewed and should be viewed in many ways as a profit center. And so how do we set up ourselves? How do we position ourselves to be viewed in a way that brings us more credibility and more respect from throughout the organization? And the only way we can do that is not to abandon, you know, our turnover reports and our headcount reports and those kinds of things, but really putting dollars and cents to some of the, I'm going to say everyday thing, but some of the things that we do that a company might not take into consideration. And so we look at the business problem and how to solve a business problem and the cost of the business problem, really costing things out and helping the company as well as others in the organization see that not only do we, you know, we contribute to the bottom line of pulling from the being an expense, but we also contribute to the bottom line in terms of revenue and how we can really impact the operation in a positive way.
You know, I think that is is critical. That is really critical you talk about, because today we do hear from HR professionals, I'm sure you do as well, that they feel like they are, you know, they're maxed. They're at their max. You know, the economy certainly isn't helping the situation. They're running on fewer people, and they have to sometimes justify themselves to the CEOs. Maybe they don't necessarily have the best seat at the table, even though ultimately you want them to, and they should strive for that, but maybe they don't. They're reporting maybe to the CFO, and they do get seen as an expense, not as, you know, something that can really build an organization. So I think this is a critical point that you make.
Absolutely. And I, you know, it's tough because we expect people to get what we do as HR professionals.
Yeah,
and I think for the most part we do, and they have their idea. We have to constantly change and challenge that idea of what they think a human resource person is and what the person should be doing. So we really have to do more a branding and rebranding of human resources within our operations. And that can be challenging. I've done it, and it can be really challenging to the traditional mindset of HR as the people departments and your problems there, training and development. But really being there to partner on business issues is critical.
So you left SHRM and you started the Power Project Institute. You brought them alive, as we like to say. And you took on this entrepreneurial role. First of all, did you find it as easy as you thought it would be, or was it a little more difficult?
Well, first, it was. I knew it was going to be challenging, David. I just didn't know how challenging. And you know what I share with people all the time? Here's how I compare it. You know, when you first move out of your parents' house, you think, I'm grown, I can do whatever I want, now I can stay up late and all that wonderful, crazy stuff. But what you don't realize is, oh, I need a broom and a dustpan. I need seasonings. I need salt and pepper and pots and pans and food and linen, right?
Yes.
And so what I realized was I missed the support system. I missed having an IT department and a marketing department, and I miss my assistant. You know, I miss some of the daily things that we take for granted. And so now I'm everything. And I had to learn real quickly to pull on those resourcefulness skills to be able to get the things done that I needed. And I had a wonderful network of people who just, you know, Pam, this is what you need to do. These are things you need to consider. So I felt prepared. But you're never really prepared for this kind of a challenge until you actually walk into it, and it's probably one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my life.
No, there's no question. I remember when I bought CMA, Career Management Associates, my organization, and I remember I came out of a big company. You know, I had all the support you could possibly need, and I remember the first time I said a decision had to be made, and I went, oh, I need to call corporate, and I realized that there was no corporate. So what I did is I called from my office to my cell phone, and I literally had a conversation very quickly, back and forth. Hey, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? You know, it was one of those moments where that realization sets in, right? That moment of like truth. And and like you, I wouldn't change a thing. But, you know, it is funny when you realize it does make a difference that you have a support system, though, doesn't it? And that those key business partners that are out there that can help you through no matter what.
Exactly. And I appreciate people who are willing to just give it to you straight. You know, sometimes in corporate environment, you don't get straight talk. You know, you get corporate talk. You get corporate speak. And I love the fact that I'm dealing with people who just give it to you straight, and it helps me with my business, and I, you know, just built such good relationships. And the other thing is, there's such a nice network of people that we partner, we do things together, and so I sort of had that corporate feel, but I have a lot more freedom than to be able to do some things that I might not have been able to do in a corporate environment.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Pam Green, president of Power Project Institute. And we're having a great conversation, aren't we, Pam?
I'm having a wonderful time, David.
Good. Well, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about your history, about where you're at, and how you got where you are today. Let's talk a little bit about your project, your Power Project Institute. Tell me a little bit about it. Tell me the services. Tell me about why somebody would want to contact you, other than obviously you do work in the HR field, you speak. Tell me a little more.
Yeah, Yeah, and I started talking about that a little bit when we first got started, so thanks for the opportunity. What we do is focus on helping companies, and as I said before, achieve success through people. Sometimes it's training and development, sometimes it's consulting, sometimes it's executive coaching. And so what I do is provide that resource to companies, and I usually start with a company leader who comes up to me after I've spoken, or someone who has heard about me or knows me, and they say, Pam, this is my challenge. And I try to help work them through the challenge. But first we assess if I'm the right person to work, that can work with them, right? I always try to find out how we can meet a person's need and then see if I'm the right person. Because if I'm not, then I guarantee you I can find somebody who can help you. So I try to just be a resource for business leaders. And then from there we try to fulfill that service. So a lot of what I do is I focus a lot on working with small companies, or a lot of what I've been asked to do. It's interesting. You sort of begin to move into an area where there is a lot of demand, and right now there's demand in small companies, and some, I work with a couple of global operations within departments. So I see a lot of focus on departmental development and departmental engagement, and I love that. So I spend a lot of time as a private consultant for some global operations.
Can you provide an example maybe of one of your success stories? Tell us a little bit about what happened. I think a lot of times it's great for listeners to get a real understanding of what you can make a difference in by talking about a success story so they can follow the process and understand.
Sure. Wow, there are just a number of them. I'm trying to think. So I've worked with a company, continued to work with a company, global operation. They wanted me to come in and do some work with one of their teams, an entire department. And they were having some challenges, I think, in the area of communication, in how they communicate among one another, but also with the rest of the organization, because they were a major part, a major branch of the organization. So we focus specifically on emotional intelligence. So I've done a couple of workshops, seminars, and now coaching for this particular organization, because once you get into emotional intelligence, you realize it's about you. And you take responsibility for your success. And that's what the most successful people are doing. And so they really wanted to adopt and are adopting this model throughout the operation, throughout the organization. And so I see it as a great success, because not only were people getting it, it was a really, really skeptical group. And they were getting it. They were making the connections between company success, their own success, and how the two can come together when they take responsibility for their success and are more self-aware and can manage themselves, et cetera, et cetera. So, and from that, I began to coach a number of individuals who needed just a little more work, a little more polish, we're seeing a significant turnaround in that area. So that's a wonderful success story. If I can share one more with you.
Of course.
Was working with an HR professional, and she was really challenged. She wanted to grow. She wanted to be able. She wanted to be seen as credible and be invited to higher levels in the organization, because she felt she was already operating there. She said, Pam, this is what I want. I said, okay. So we go through a number of coaching sessions. By the second session, she says she's had this intense conversation with the leader. And I said, well, tell me about it. She says, she told the leader, you know, I'm tired of doing all this. You've got me doing all of these different things. And, you know, I'm stepping up to the table. I'm doing all these different things that you want me to do. I feel like I should be recognized for all of the work, or, you know, get me some help, or I'm not going to be able to do these things anymore. And I said, can you stop for a second? I said, now, didn't you just tell me a couple of sessions ago that you really want to be seen as, you know, credible, believable, reliable? You wanted to be seen as the business leader that you've been operating. So, but what did you just tell them in your conversation? Do you think that they see you in that light based on what you said? And so it was an eye-opening experience for her. And that, you know, to me, that was one of those moments where I really felt like, one, there was breakthrough. too, that I was really able to help someone find success. And now she's doing really well. We check in every now and then. Our sessions have ended. We check in every now and then, and she really feels more confident. She's adopted a number of strategies that she's come up with in the coaching. And she feels very empowered and in control of her career. And she's seeing the kind of success that she wanted because she's checking what she's saying. And what coaching and what I try to do is make people aware of things that they may not even be aware of in what they say and what they do so that they can find success.
No, I think that's an interesting point. Sometimes you mentioned it earlier in the first section that being blunt sometimes, telling them exactly what they need to hear to improve, mm-hmm. sometimes is exactly what they need. And too often we don't see that happening, even in the coaching world. Sometimes individuals try to move people from a coaching perspective without necessarily being blunt and try to tweak them a little. But I happen to agree with you that I think that sometimes right in the face is where you need to be to make them really understand and show them exactly what they need to do to fix their behavior or fix their problem, whatever that may be.
Right, right. I mean, I always tell my clients, people who come to me and they say, oh, I need some coaching. I say, now here, I'm gonna share with you what I see and love.
Right.
But, you know, this is not about me making you feel good. This is about me helping you move closer to where you need to be. And unfortunately, a number of people don't get that. You know, they get to hear what they want to hear from people that are around them and that surround them and not what they really need to hear. They don't get that real feedback. So it's very helpful. It's very therapeutic is what one client said to me.
Yeah, and they have to be open for it, right? I mean,
They
have to be open to be willing to, accept constructive mm-hmm. feedback. And I think that you telling them up front is critical because they need to understand
yes.
that you're not there to coddle. You're not there mm-hmm. to enhance their egos. You're there to actually, in a way, break them down into and remold them in a better person, in a better shape.
Exactly, exactly.
When's your next book coming out? Because I know you have 4 books on the market today.
I do. I can't seem to stop writing.
Yeah,
and people ask, when do you find time? My first book, which was Lead, Achieve, and Succeed in HR, I remember having a meeting with the publisher, Westcom Publishing, and Michael says, Pam, you've got to let go of this book. And I said, why? I'm like, just one more thing. And he said, no, you don't have a book, you have volumes. You know, you've got to stop at some point. And so I did. And so the rest of the other books that I have are part of the things that have been in me and I've been writing for a number of years. So I finally was able to get a number of them published. So I have the Brace Yourself for White Young Professionals, which really takes them into how to be successful from their perspective and really give them some insights into things that they can do because they're just so bright, so bright. So many people that are young professionals, and we have to adopt to their new style. So that's what that book is about. And then The Power of Engagement is for leaders who need to think about different strategic ways of engaging their performers and retaining them. And then I have The Power to Prioritize, and that's my baby. That's my second baby. That one's about setting priorities and achieving goals. And then I'm working on my it'll be hot off the press by probably August, but I'm working on a book that is about individuals who have multiple skills, multiple talents, and how they're being underutilized, how mm-hmm. they can become more utilized, and how companies can really begin to engage those individuals. So that one's like my third baby. I'm really, really excited about that one as well.
No, that's great. And certainly, you know what? We'll have you back on when your book breaks, okay? So you let me know when that is and we can talk about it. No, it's
absolutely
awesome. You know, I saw you speak at the Maine HR convention here back just a couple months ago here. And I got to tell you that you did a great job. So I can speak honestly that it was a great show. You did a great job up there. And, of course, I don't know if you've ever spoken at the Maine HR Convention before, but Bud does a great job. And
he does.
And Law Publishers is a sponsor of the show as well. And I'm not just saying that because of it, but they do a fantastic job at conventions. They really do.
Yeah, it was a machine. It was perfect. I mean, it was run, you know, honestly, like a SHRM conference. And I was really very proud of the work that he had done and the team had done. It was just it was so nicely done, so well done, but thank you.
No, you're very welcome. So, you know, we have a couple minutes left here, and, you know, what I'd like to do is, why don't you provide us with a couple of examples, maybe, of where you think you see HR today going in the engagement area, because obviously that's one of the areas you talk about. And I'd love to know your thoughts on where you see employee engagement over the next year or so.
Wow, that's a really, really good question. I have a research report that I did, and it actually should be on shelves now, but it's called the Engagement Outlook. And specifically, I had a team of folks who went out. We surveyed well over 500 business leaders and HR professionals at the end of last year, because I wanted to know that the answer to that specific question. And what's interesting is what came out of it was that HR professionals are highly taxed. They know they have to focus on talent engagement and retention and satisfaction. However, they're not getting the resources that they need, and they're not sure how to get those resources. And so other things, more pressing things, seem to be creeping up and cropping up for them. So my concern, and when I wrote this particular research report, my concern was, how do we get them to see that there are ways to get the resources you need, keep it in the forefront, while also achieving some of your other responsibilities? So I think in the next year we're going to see either a couple of different things. I think we'll see some organizations who get engagement, the importance of engagement, that, you know, they're quickly going to adopt, and you don't have to worry about them. They'll get it. They'll put the resources behind it. In others, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. I think talent will sort of take care of itself. It'll figure its way out. And I really anticipate that we're going to see even greater turnover as we see the economy rebound. From an engagement perspective, I really believe that HR professionals are going to have to, although I know a number of them already are, help to put the message out front that engagement is so important to the future and the sustainability of the operation. So I think in the coming couple of years, we're going to see even greater emphasis. But what has to happen, and unfortunately this is what has to happen, is sometimes that best talent, that the most talented person, has to leave the organization, and then others will leave, and then they'll get it. So I'm hoping that won't happen. I'm hoping I'm wrong. But I do think that we're going to see some turnover of major proportion in some operations.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. And certainly we're seeing on the recruiting side a huge surge in talent looking. And that's mm-hmm. that's just the way it is. I mean, that people have been holding off for a couple of years due to the economy, and now they're, you know, we used to call in as recruiters and ask, you know, would you be interested in talking to us about, and they go, well, I'm not quite sure, you know, I've been here a while, I got it pretty good, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Now it's, would you like to talk? Yes, what do you got? I mean, you don't even get to finish the sentence. You know, the sentence doesn't even get to finished. You know, boom, what do you got? I'm like, oh, wow.
No
need to be so quick on the trigger. But, yes, we'll be happy to tell you what we got. You know, it is.
Yeah, business
it's
is
true.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining. But, you know, mm-hmm. from that standpoint, it is something that we have to be aware of. Well, Pam, I want to thank you very much for being on the HR Power Hour today. And certainly after this broadcast at the HRPowerHour.com, we will have a link directly to you and to your website and so forth. But if somebody wants to reach you directly, is there a number they can reach you, a website? Obviously, I can tell you it's powerprojectinstitute.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
And what is the number?
And the phone, yes, the phone number is 202-293-4965.
Fantastic.
Thank you, David.
Oh, you're very welcome. This was great, and hope to see you again soon, and let us know when the new book is coming out, okay?
I will absolutely do that. You take care.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampiFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Martha Ramirez today. She is the director of SHRM in the Western Region and their member services. She's going to be talking about trends in the western half of the country, why SHRM matters today, and that the volunteer family of SHRM is still important and why. Way out there in Chicago today, Martha.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David.
I know your counterpart out here, Susan Post, and she's been a guest on the show here. And she said, I had to talk to you because you know everything there is to know about SHRM in the western region of the country.
Well, we'll see.
Well, that's what she told me, but no expectations at all here. None whatsoever.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about, first of all, can you give me a little bit about your background and how you got to SHRM and what brought you there?
Absolutely. Well, I had been working in HR for a couple of companies for about 11 years. One was in banking right before, and so I did a lot of recruiting and training for them. And before that, I had a long career with a printing company here in Chicago and spent, you know, the last part of my career with them in HR. So I was one of those people that kind of accidentally came into HR through a request to do some training. And the training was diversity training, which was very interesting. And, you know, that developed into all sorts of other training and development opportunities. And eventually, I think when I left there, I was the diversity manager for the company. And, you know, had broadened my horizons in many areas of HR. So after those two experiences, I decided to apply for a position with the pinnacle employer of HR, and that would be SHRM. So that would happen in 2006, and I've been 7 years now with SHRM.
No, that's fantastic. And mm-hmm. So you cover the entire western half of the country, right?
I do, yeah. And the west is not what maybe you would think is the west, you know, geographically, because we divided up the country into two. And if you can think of Ohio as being west, it's kind of a crooked line, you know, starting with Ohio, and then Texas is part of the eastern region, so... It kind of all equals out when you think about the numbers and the number of chapters and members. So we kind of had a delineation of the territories. And but most of the West is the region I cover.
No, that's great. So tell me, what are some of the trends you're seeing for 2013, first half of the year? You know, we're pretty much over the first half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me some of the things you're seeing that are maybe hot button issues, hot things that are out there that SHRM's dealing with that you're seeing on the western half of the country.
Okay. Well, we have the one that comes to mind right now because just recently did two presentations and talked about this is the skills gap and the fact that we have a huge number of people that are unemployed in this country, you know, more in some states than others. However, they don't have the right skills. The people that are unemployed and the number of jobs that are opening are not matching up. And so we have this huge problem of it's not so much an unemployment problem, but a skills gap problem of needing the right people in the jobs. And so we need to start, you know, somewhere to either retrain or train our youth to, you know, take on these jobs, especially the STEM jobs, you know, the science and math and engineering jobs. And this is especially close in my region because I also recently traveled to North Dakota, which is a really unique place because they have an oil boom going on right now.
They sure do, shale oil boom.
And they have, I don't know, one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country because they just can't get enough people. And so it kind of reminds me of the gold rush that happened, you know, I think in the 1800s in California. People are
not because you not because you remember it, but because you read about it, right? Okay, just making sure. Yes, that's a,
but you know, they have an abundance of people coming to North Dakota to you know, because they've heard the same thing, but they're not the right people. You know, they're
right.
looking for engineers and specifically petroleum engineers and people that are you know, skilled in this field. And you have, you know, families that are camping out in parks because there's no housing for them, and the schools are overflowing, and it just creates this dynamic. And even they can't even find skilled labor to, for example, open a McDonald's. You know, so they have unique challenges in that they close stores early because they don't have the staff to manage it. So it's a very unique people. They have a lot of bodies over there, but they're just not the right ones.
It is a real dilemma, isn't it? That you know, we've talked about this on the show with a number of guests, and there is this long-term solution, right? Retrain, redevelop, you know, make sure the education system is correct, and we could have a six-hour show on the education system. But, we, you know, to make sure that we're teaching our kids correctly, getting them in the right direction, make sure that they're focused on the right jobs of tomorrow. But for right now, today, this year, what do we do?
I think we have to, you know, really search high and low and have unique ways that we can attract the people that we're looking for and need in our industries. You know, we talk about work flexibility. You know, how are you attracting? So you have this petroleum engineer that you need, you know, and besides money, you know, what can you offer to get that talent that you need? You know, there's workplace flexibility, there's benefits, compensation obviously is part of the package, but, you know, what is the future? What is the vision for that employee? It's, you know, folks are being very selective too these days. So it's about what's the whole package of what you can offer that skilled labor so that you can not only attract them but retain them down the road.
I think
so you have to think big picture. You have to think long term, big picture. It's not just about, okay, we're going to teach you this. It's really a more strategic approach.
No, I think you're right, and I think that is the challenge because it is a long-term, it's a short-term fix for a long-term problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we all know, compensation is a big piece of it, but in every survey, and I know you know this as well as I do, it is not the number one thing. It is just not the number one thing. It's like number 8 or 9 in the last survey I saw.
Exactly. I think WorkFlex is becoming a very high on the list benefit that people are, you know, that not just young people, because I think that becomes a, and not just parents, you know, it's everybody's looking for some relief with their work. And I love the way we phrase it. It's how we, you know, when work works, when we work, how we work, where we work. That needs to be looked at if you want to keep retaining and attracting the right talent.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, we talked a little bit off the air before the show that California, and I kiddingly say this all the time, whatever.
That is definitely west.
Right, you know, that is west. But you do certainly have that area, and a lot of trends come out of California, and they have a lot of rules and regulations, and certainly have seen a lot of things happening out there. I think you report of what's going on out there in the real west part of the coast. Just give us a flavor for it, if you can.
Well, we're probably in our second or third year of developing a California strategy in conjunction with the state council out in California, the SHRM State Council. And we've done some things, you know, in our strategy already. We recently had, I think, our second annual California Legislative Conference, where the focus was just on California law. And I think it was very successful. And that was an event, but, you know, a lot of work goes into those kind of events. But we're looking broader than that. We're really trying to provide the tools and resources that California HR professionals need to be successful, because their laws and their policies are so unique to the rest of the country. And there's other states, too. I live in Illinois, and I've heard Illinois is probably the second most, unique market legislatively, but so we're trying to address that need, and we have, for example, a California newsletter. We have California salary surveys going on. We're trying to, you know, build, and we've accomplished some things, as I said before, to really help that audience. It's a very large state, and there's even dynamics between the northern and the southern part of the state. So it's a really interesting place, and we're really just trying to address all the needs out there. And it's a long-term strategy, so we're working it.
You know, I was talking to a consultant out there, and David Bowman, he owns TCG Consulting in HR and outplacement and coaching and everything out in there. And he mentioned that there's this onslaught of, because of things happening there, a lot of companies moving out of California and going to either Texas or Arizona. And there's certainly a boom in Texas in terms mm-hmm. of the number of employees. Is Sherm looking at that in any way and saying how they can help in terms of making sure the right talent stays and you know, helps companies in those areas?
I think we're enabling the HR professional to do that. You know, so we're not getting involved with specific companies or industries, you know, some of that probably in some of the toolkits that we have, but we're really trying to educate and enable and provide the right research so that our HR professionals can, you know, be armed, so to speak, to the job they need to do in their companies.
No, I think that's right. I mean, you guys provide an incredible amount of training and development materials online, through the programs that you provide, through the, you know, the big conference you're going to be having here.
Yeah, and that's coming to my hometown.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's awesome. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, I think that's part of where I see Sherm does a lot of legislative things, I know, as well. And
yes.
You know, this is an area that I see that they do shape policy in the HR world. They do. And they help shape policy, I should say.
Exactly.
And so, you know, to that aspect, are you seeing anything that's a hot button issue other than maybe healthcare, which of course we all know is certainly a hot button issue mm-hmm. right now? Anything like that that you could speak about that you're seeing on the West Coast?
Yeah, I can speak at a high level about some of the other initiatives that we
sure.
have in progress right now. One is the standards, which is pretty exciting, the HR standards. Lee Webster at Sherm is leading that, and we have been, I don't know if the word is approved or certified, but we are the approved provider, maybe is the term, and I don't want to misspeak it because, again, I'm not an expert in this area, but to create some standards with the ANSI organization, which is, you know, the folks that bring you ISO 100 and
yep.
all that, to provide HR standards, which is kind of unique for us because we're not manufacturing, we're not creating standards around some of those other things you might think of as, you know, needing standards, but there's a need out there to have at least a minimum standard for different functions in HR. So that's a really important initiative. We also have just rolled out about a year ago our HR competency model, which is really different from any other competency model I've seen, because not only does it have 9 competencies and goes into them in depth about what they mean and what the descriptors are, but it's by level as well. There's 4 different levels. So there's an entry level, a mid-manager level, a senior manager, and then an executive level. So you can go in, and there's an assessment that is being developed, that was being tested and is being fine-tuned, I should say, right now, so that you can go in and do a self-assessment to see where you are in your career and what you need to do to get to the next level.
No, I think that's great.
Yeah, using the competency model. So I played around with it a little bit, and it's a really cool thing.
No, that's great. Well, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking to Martha Ramirez, Martha, welcome back.
Thank you.
But, you know, we've talked a little bit about SHRM, and we've talked a little bit about some of the things that are happening on the West Coast and some of the trends that are going on in terms of with SHRM. Tell me a little about you personally, some of the maybe one of the projects you're working on, some of the things that, you know, can get people excited about what's happening at more of a local level.
Okay, well, local's a hard thing to define because we, you know, we're so region-driven. So when I talk about my region, which is the North Central region that I cover specifically, you know, other than the west side of the country, you know, it's still 10 states. So I do a lot of travel to my states. I speak. I exhibit. You know, I have a booth on SHRM and answer any membership questions they might have or certification questions. But I also work, when I travel to these states, I also work very extensively with the volunteers that run the state councils and chapters. And we have quite a few of those. We have about 575 chapters.
Wow.
And obviously one state council for every state. So they're very, I mean, I call them my most engaged members because they, you know, they have, a lot of them are long-term volunteers. They started a committee level maybe, and they work their way up to a chapter president, and then when they're done with their term, they're on the state council, and, you know, there's even opportunities beyond that. So they are just a powerful and an engaged group of people that I work with quite a bit.
Do you find that HR professionals sometimes wonder why they're in SHRM, or do you think that they truly understand the value of all the different levels, you know, the SPHR, the PHR, now the mm-hmm. global PHR. Mm-hmm. You know, when I talk to HR professionals, you really do have some that are, I want to call it the full buy-in, right? They're just,
right.
They love everything about it. And then there are some that are like, they're kind of bought in. I suppose this is with any group, right? Any organization.
Mm-hmm.
How do you try to get or capture the ones that are on the edge, that are trying to really see the value in it, of what that can mm-hmm. be for their organization or for themselves? What do you tell them?
I try to explain it in a what's in it for you kind of way. I think everybody's so stretched for time these days. And even those that are in transition, you know, they're focused on trying to find a job. So even though they're not in a job, they're, you know, their focus is in trying to get that next job. The people that are working are doing twice as much. You know, staff is being cut. So it's a harder sell to try to get people to come into the volunteer family. But, you know, when I approach it as a value proposition, it seems to click. And that's really, you're giving back to the profession, number one. But you're also gaining a whole lot of skills when you lead in a volunteer role. You can, you know, obviously your leadership skills, your strategic skills, because, you know, we expect our chapters and our state councils to have strategic planning, succession planning, just like they do for their organization. So even if you're not in that role in your job, you can be, you know, a president of a chapter and be responsible for strategic planning and succession planning and holding people accountable and recruiting. And, you know, so it really helps develop a whole lot of skills for folks. Then it doesn't feel like, you know, like a duty as opposed to a, hey, I'm, and, you know, and the other point I make is you meet a lot of great people. There's great networking. There's great friendships to be made when you're involved in a group like that. And people that are in, you know, like what you're calling them, you know, they're total buy-in, you know, they're my evangelist. You know, they just talk about how great the experience has been to be in a volunteer role. And so, like, at annual conference, which is in Chicago, if I haven't mentioned that already, we're gonna have a lounge just for our volunteer leaders to come in and network and relax. And, you know, so it's a little perk that we give back to them. In November, we do a leadership conference for our volunteers. We bring them into D.C. We have all kinds of professional development for them to learn more about not only their volunteer role, but HR, and hear some motivational speakers. So we also give back to our volunteers, and, you know, we really hope people think about volunteering and giving back to their profession, but, you know, more importantly, doing it for themselves.
Well, that is, at the end of the day, what companies think mm-hmm. about, you know, what is the benefit
right.
for me as a CFO, CEO, to send my person, or maybe pay for, you know, ultimately maybe have them spend the time to go to the chapter meeting every month, have them spend the time to volunteer and do work for what is the benefit to us as an organization. I think you're right. It is about being able to network with other professionals and share experiences. That's what I certainly see, is that is an invaluable method of providing information to an organization, a company that you can't buy.
Exactly.
So what would you say for someone who's going after their SPHR or their global HR, or maybe even their PHR, what would you say is, does it matter what level they get? Does it really matter? Or what is it that they should be thinking about for those levels? Because I do get asked that question sometimes.
Yeah, and I do too. And I went through the PHR and then 4 years later took the SPHR. You know, so I struggled with that question as well. But it's not a progression, and I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. It's not like you get your PHR and then you get your senior. It's whatever you're doing. You know, so if you're more operational in your job, if you're, you know, doing a lot of the, what's another word for operational? You know, you're doing the task and the duties that is required of an HR professional. So some of that is dictated by the rules, the guidelines. You know, you have to have so much education, so much HR experience, and you can only qualify for the PHR. And then if you have more, you can qualify for the SPHR. And then if you have global experience, you can obviously qualify for the global. So some of that is dictated for you, but if you qualify for any of them, it just depends on what you're doing. You know, so if you're doing strategic work, go for the SPHR. It's more strategic in nature. It's at a higher level in terms of the kind of decisions that you make. But it's not a progression, so to speak. I know a lot of people approach it that way. I know I did. And the handbook that's out there that you can order and have mailed to you, or you can read it online on the HRCA website, is very helpful because it walks you through that question. You know, which one is the best certification for me? And there's some little mini quizzes and stuff that you can take to help make that decision for you. But, yeah, some of it is dictated based on what level of experience and education you have.
No, that's great. Well, Martha, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. You've provided a great overview, and I really appreciate your time. If they want to reach you, where should they go?
My email address is Martha, M-A-R-T-H-A, dot Ramirez, R-A-M-I-R-E-Z, at shrm.org. And happy to answer any questions anybody might have of me. You want to come to Chicago and want to know a great place to eat, you know, email me and I'll give you some suggestions. Yeah,
there's some fantastic places in Chicago's to eat.
Hope to see you all there.
No, it's great. I love Chicago. And also after this show, of course, the HR Power Hour website will have your information and a click on directly to you, so we'll make sure that is set up. Again, thank you, Martha, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Great conversation.
And now your HR tip of the week. What is the future of work in 2020? One of the challenges might be job hoppers. According to an article by Dana Williams on HiringBoss.com, millennials are increasing their impact within offices globally. By 2020, they are predicted to make up to 46% or almost half of the workforce. Millennials are significant because they are known for job hopping every 2 to 3 years. This is because of their search for meaningful work, cultural alignment, and getting what they want. Is this going to be a problem for you? It might be. And that is your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to bring back Don McPherson, president of Modern Survey. He's going to be talking about peak performance through engaged employees. What are the best practices for measuring employee engagement? And how can engaged employees really make a difference in your organization? He's also going to rate HR and how well they're doing. He's got the survey data to back it up. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.